And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website, nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. Well, there was a major announcement made this week as it relates to, what I'd call safety and security from foreign adversaries here across the United States. The Trump administration announced earlier this week that they are launching an aggressive multi-agency effort to protect America's farmlands, food supplies, and critical research from influence and control by U.S. adversaries. This includes banning the purchasing of farmland by Chinese nationals. Agricultural Secretary Brooke Rollins was with several officials, including Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, and Attorney General Pam Bondi, to announce the National Farm Security Action Plan. She did that earlier this week, and before we get into any additional details as to what exactly this is going to mean, I think it's important to hear directly from the Secretary herself. Here is Brooke Rollins earlier this week.
It is not and has never been God's purpose that we suffer, but it is within His design that we rely upon His creation. We see that in extraordinary natural tragedy as over the last few days, but we also see it in the beneficial fruits of His creation, the bounty of the land, the yield of our farms, the produce and the product of our labor. That dependency upon His goodness is part of His purpose. And so as stewards of creation, we have an obligation to protect it. In protecting it, we protect ourselves, and that's why we're here today. Nowhere is this illuminated more vividly than in the stewardship and conservation of our American farmlands. We're here to talk about that today, and we're here to address one particular facet of that stewardship, responding to one particular type of threat. The plain reality is that American agriculture in American hands is a positive good, a rich blessing that we carefully tend and upon which rests the sustenance and future of our republic. Every family, every home, every community depends upon what our farmers do, and they support and sustain us, not merely by keeping us materially fed, but by keeping us spiritually strong. The farm's produce is not just a commodity, it is a way of life that underpins America itself. And that's exactly why it is under threat from criminals, from political adversaries, and from hostile regimes that understand our way of life as a profound and existential threat to themselves.
I'm going to pause Brooke Rollins right there. I mean, the point that she's making, and this has been a growing concern, and I've got some charts and some details that we'll get into throughout the show this morning. This idea, this concept that foreign entities, and obviously a lot of the big focus is China. You've got a lot of Chinese so-called businesses, which we'll throw in air quotes, that are in many cases solely controlled by the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, that are purchasing companies, purchasing farmland. Smithfield Foods is a great example of that, the major footprint here across the eastern half of North Carolina, that are purchasing critical pieces of our agriculture supply chain here, homeside in America. And, you know, I hate to use this example and hate to bring this up because you've probably heard it 1,000 times, but American businesses and American citizens can't just buy land in China. That is not allowed. The Chinese Communist Party, the Chinese government, does not allow the vast majority of American businesses and does not allow American individuals and citizens at all to purchase Chinese land. And this comes back to this discussion of, does the United States want to have this this kind of stature and promote that we're isolationists and we don't want anybody else and we don't want anything else and we want to do our own thing? No, I don't think that's the case. We're not opposed to foreign entities, foreign companies making investments in the United States. But I do think we should have, and it should cause significant pause when we look at critical pieces of our food supply chain being purchased by adversaries like China that, I'll state once again, do not have America's best interests at heart. The Chinese Communist Party does not want to see America succeed. They do not want to see America prosper. So when you've got members of that party and companies controlled by that party buying companies like Smithfield Foods, buying hundreds, if not thousands, of acres of workable, usable agricultural land across the United States, that should be a significant concern for a lot of people. Right? You look at what an apocalypse looks like. People without food for 2 or 3 days and everything starts falling apart. Once people no longer have access to food, you see this during natural disasters, the community completely collapses. Now, fortunately, with natural disasters, they're, for the most part, geographically relatively small, right? You look at the devastation in Western North Carolina. Yes, a large area, but not the entire United States. A relatively, in the grand scheme of everything, small portion of land. And fortunately, charities, governments, and other groups are able to funnel food, water supplies into those areas so they can get back on their feet. But what would happen if there was a national crisis in the supply chain for food? What if the grocery store shelves, we saw a little bit of this during COVID, but what if the grocery store shelves were actually empty for days or weeks at a time? Think about how quickly society would completely devolve into madness, chaos, and anarchy without a sustainable food supply. If there was nothing to eat, most individuals don't have but a couple of days worth of food in their houses. Some folks have nothing but a day worth of food. And how quickly society would devolve if something like that were to take place. And there's a real risk, I think, a real risk and a real concern that that would happen as Chinese influence continues on some of these very important critical pieces of our agricultural supply chain. More from Secretary Brooke Rollins.
For them, agricultural lands and our farms, because they are a previous inheritance, are weapons to be turned against us. We see it again and again. From Chinese communist acquisition of American farmland to criminal exploitation of our system of agriculture to the theft of operational information required to work the land and beyond. All of this takes what is profoundly good and turns it towards evil purposes. But November 2024 signaled it's time for our federal government to wake up and step up, and that's exactly what we are doing under the leadership of President Donald Trump. With this announcement today, we are taking this purpose and our American farmland back. American agriculture is not just about feeding our families, but about protecting our nation and standing up to foreign adversaries who are buying our farmland, stealing our research, and creating dangerous vulnerabilities in the very systems that sustain us. Reshoring and nearshoring our food and agriculture supply chain is essential for our nation's security. In coordination with the White House, the Departments of Treasury, Defense, Homeland Security, and Justice, as well as state governors, state agriculture commissioners, local tribal and territorial governments, today we announce the USDA's National Farm Security Action Plan. This plan includes 7 key action items, and there's a lot of people here that I want you to hear from, so I'm not going to go one by one, but just very quickly. It's on our website. The press has gotten a preview of it, and we can ask some questions once we finish the main program. But very quickly, and perhaps the most important, the first of the 7, is securing and protecting American farmland ownership. Actively engaging at every level of government to take swift legislative and executive action to ban the purchase of American farmland by Chinese nationals and other foreign adversaries. Standing on the shoulders of great governors, 3 of whom are standing behind me, who have already been leading the way on this issue. And at the federal government level, working to do everything within our ability, including presidential authorities, to claw back what has already been purchased by China and other foreign adversaries. Additionally, working with the Treasury of the Secretary of the Treasury, along with our Defense Department, on memorandums to ensure that moving forward, there is a much more intentional look at who is buying what in this country and from where they are in the world. Also enhancing our agricultural supply chain resilience, also protecting our U.S. nutrition safety net from fraud and foreign exploitation. Number four, defending agricultural research and innovation. No more sweetheart deals and secret pacts with countries that do not have our best interests in mind. Number five, making sure that America First is in every USDA program, from farm loans to food safety. We have already canceled 7 active agreements with entities in foreign countries of concern and will continue to cancel additional agreements moving forward. I signed a memo today, thank you, which immediately removes 70 citizens from countries of concerns that currently are affiliated with the USDA through contracts or research arrangements. And we are working to issue regulatory action to remove over 550 entities from foreign countries of concern from our preferred catalog. Number six, safeguarding plant and animal health, working to make sure that we know what is coming in and how to control animal diseases. And number seven, protecting critical infrastructure from our farms and our food and our supply chains, again, along with so many partners across this government here in Washington and across our states. Now, please help me welcome to the podium the amazing Secretary Pete Hegseth.
So that's the main part is what you just heard there from Brooke Rollins. I mean, long press event. I'll have the full link over in our show notes at patreon.com/Nick Craig. But she lays out some of those 7 key elements that the United States government is going to try and deal with, as you heard from Brooke Rollins, whether that's through passing legislation in Congress, through executive order, and very importantly, working with states and predominantly state governments to make sure that these things are under control. And again, I want to try and dispel some of this notion that, oh, well, you're talking like an isolationist. You don't want any sort of foreign investment. You want the United States to just be this cocoon by itself where nobody else has any sort of discussions and nobody's allowed to speak. And no, that's not the case at all. I do not subscribe to the idea that you are not allowed to be critical of foreign adversaries. And again, adversaries. We're talking about China, who, as you heard from Secretary Brooke Rollins, is not interested in the best interest of the United States. We are talking about foreign adversaries controlling farmland and, in some cases, key critical portions of the food supply and the food supply chain in the United States. I do not believe that having that discussion and thinking that that is a real and substantial risk makes you an isolationist. I think it makes you skeptical of what these entities truly are interested in and should raise some alarms. I mean, when you've got hundreds of thousands of acres of usable farmland that is being purchased and is still, in this case, being used as active farmland, that switch could be flipped at any point. Again, because you're talking about a foreign government, an adversarial foreign government that is not interested in the success and the prosperity of the United States of America. That is a real concern to me. Now, fortunately, here in North Carolina, there's already been some discussion on this over just earlier this year, well before this announcement earlier this week from the federal government. Now, Secretary of Agriculture Steve Troxler, who is the commissioner of the North Carolina Department of Agriculture, told the Carolina Journal after this announcement, quote, I support measures to protect our vulnerable and irreplaceable farmland because we are losing farmland every day in North Carolina in a variety of ways. North Carolina stands to lose over 1 million acres of farm and forest land to development alone by 2040, based on a recent report from the American Farmland Trust. We need to focus efforts to slow the loss of farm and forest land so this this valuable land is not taken out of our food production forever. I have said for many years that having the natural resources available to feed ourselves and our country is a matter of national security. Here's a very concerning stat for you. As of January last year, 3.5% of farmland in North Carolina, or upwards of 700,000 acres of farmland, was foreign owned. Now, that report's from January of 2024. So at this point, that report's, you know, a year and a half old. 3.5%. Is that the largest number in the world? Is our supply chain going to fall bottom out at 3.5%? No. But as that number starts creeping up higher, as it gets into 5 and 6 and 7%, 8, 9%, now you've got a serious problem that you're staring down the barrel of. When you've got foreign entities, not all of whom are adversarial, but when you've got foreign entities, and some of which who could be adversarial, owning 700,000, a million and a half acres of farmland just in North Carolina, right? We're not talking about nationally. It's 3.5%, 700,000 acres just in our state. That, to me, is a serious, serious problem. So the North Carolina General Assembly has been trying to deal with this. There was two pieces of legislation that have been discussed and did pass both the House and the Senate. They have not been signed into law, and they have not passed the opposite chamber, but there's been a House version and a Senate version. The House version is the North Carolina Farmland and Military Protection Act. That's House Bill 133. Its sponsors include Representative Jennifer Balcom out of Henderson County, John Bell out of Wayne, Jeff Zinger out of Forsyth, and Neil Jackson out of Moore County. And that legislation would prohibit adversarial foreign governments defined as state-controlled enterprises or governments subject to the U.S. International Traffic in Arms Regulation from acquiring, leasing, or holding any interest in agricultural land or real estate within a 75-mile radius of a military installation in North Carolina. Proponents of this legislation say that the law protects national security, food supply, and critical resources. Representative Jeff Zinger told the Carolina Journal, quote, "I'm just thrilled that the federal government is stepping up and realizing this could be a really big problem. I think folks are starting to understand that even though we have a global economy, we can also create vulnerabilities if we're not wise. And we know where people are going to be a little bit rightfully concerned." And, you know, he's talking about these vulnerabilities that can be created in relatively small geographical areas, in very relatively small portions of the agriculture or the food supply chain. It doesn't take much to upend some of those entire chains. It wouldn't take a whole lot for some of those facilities in key strategic areas and key strategic bottlenecks to cause a serious problem in the overall food supply. So that was that's House Bill 133. In the North Carolina Senate, a similar bill, which is called the Prohibiting Foreign Ownership of NC Land, that's Senate Bill 394, was also proposed in the state Senate this session. It prohibits land acquisition by adversarial nations outlined in the bill as China, Iran, North Korea, Russia, or entities that they control. It blocks these foreign entities from owning agricultural lands and lands within 25 miles of a military installation or an area designated by the Federal Aviation Administration as special use airspace. So fortunately, our lawmakers here in North Carolina understand and have seen this risk. And by the way, legislation similar to this was introduced last session. It did not make its way fully through the North Carolina House and Senate, similar to the two pieces that we're discussing this morning. But it is on the minds and it is being acted on here in North Carolina. Unfortunately, both of these bills, Senate Bill 394 and House Bill 133, are for all intents and purposes stalled out in the General Assembly. Neither of them have had any movement since the latter parts of May. So they've done all the pieces that are required to meet the crossover deadline, and they're still considered active pieces of legislation, but they have not had any significant movement since that period of time. And typically, if something sits kind of dormant for months, especially as we head into continued discussions of the budget and the general lawmakers in Raleigh trying to get out of Raleigh and end the legislative session, it seems pretty, I don't know if I'd call it obvious, but it seems that, at least for now, they're essentially stalled out. They're not dead, but they're stalled out. Now, there's always the possibility that this legislation could end its find its way into the budget as part of, the budgets are typically a couple of hundred pages, if not more. So it could end up in there. There is also the possibility that because of this announcement from Agricultural Secretary Brooke Rollins earlier this week, that when lawmakers do get back at the end of July, that they will and could potentially re-spark the debate on these two pieces of legislation. So I bring you all of this information because I really haven't seen it anywhere else. And I think it's important to note that where those things stand right now. We're getting some live commentary in this morning, which we always appreciate on our YouTube, Rumble, and live chats. Farmland and food production. Smithfield in North Carolina is owned by China. Yes, that is exactly the case. And that was a big discussion back probably 5 or 6 years ago when it was announced. Actually, it was longer than that. It was almost a decade ago at this point, 2013, when a Chinese company acquired Smithfield Foods, which is, by the way, the world's largest pork producer, has major facilities here in North Carolina in a deal valued at $4.72 billion. And to that point, in 2013, when that happened, it was the single largest Chinese acquisition of a U.S. company. That is a major concern. That is a huge, to me, a massive problem. And you can go online and read all about it. And there's obviously been a lot of coverage over the last decade or so on this. But you've got Smithfield Foods, which people have seen all across the state of North Carolina. You can't miss their facilities if you're driving around the state, that is owned by a Hong Kong-based company. And one thing we do know about the Chinese economy is that the vast majority of so-called companies in China are just arms and legs and extensions of the Chinese Communist Party. And so when you've got them purchasing Smithfield for almost $5 billion back in 2013, Smithfield is the world's largest pork producer. Would you argue that that is a potential risk, a potential vulnerability in the American food supply? I mean, I'd say so. Pork is a large part of the United States economy. It is a key point, a portion of the agricultural industry across the state, which, by the way, I'll note, the agricultural business is the single largest business in North Carolina. Still to this day, it's not tech, it's not biotech, it's not healthcare, it's not anything else. The largest industry in our state is still to this day agriculture. It has a multi-hundred-billion-dollar impact on our U.S. on our North Carolina economy each and every year. It is a key portion of what drives our state. For example, coming up a little bit later on, we'll talk about CNBC ranking North Carolina as the number one state for business. Agriculture is a major part of that. So you've got Smithfield Foods, owned by this Hong Kong-based company, which undoubtedly has some control over, has some level of control from the Chinese Communist Party. And there was some discussion about that during this press conference that we were just listening to a little bit of, as Pam Bondi talked about the CCP having ties to a vast majority of these countries. And I just want to show you this image. This image is from June of last year. So this image is just about a year or so old. It's put together by the New York Post, and it shows Chinese-owned farmland in the United States. And boy, howdy, did you look at all of that red in eastern North Carolina? You've got from Charlotte almost down to the Wilmington area, north of here up towards the Greenville area, and then on the Virginia border down. You've got this huge chunk of land essentially east of Interstate 95, which is largely owned by the Chinese. Now, a lot of that red that you are seeing here in North Carolina, and the reason a lot of the red that you're seeing there is in fact Smithfield Foods, because again, they acquired it back in 2013. So a lot of what you're seeing there, I'll zoom in here on North Carolina, is the Smithfield effect. They're predominantly located in eastern North Carolina. You can't tell me, looking at this chart, Fort Liberty is on the thing, Fort Bragg, you've got Camp Lejeune, both in these areas. And you're going to tell me that that's not a concern? Regardless of the military installations that are right nearby, think about how much food, how much product is coming out of the eastern half of North Carolina, not just feeding our state, but feeding the rest of the country. And if you look at some other areas, you can see some of these big blocks in Texas that are owned. And then as you head your way on over to California, some big problems there as well. Big areas near Fort Irwin in California and the portions of Southern California that have the same problem, owned by the Chinese Communist Party, at least in part. Right, they masqueraded under, oh, well, this is a Hong Kong-based business, and so on and so forth, with ties to the CCP. This has been a growing risk and a growing concern. Zooming out on the map, you can see these little red blotches all over the place near some very key critical pieces of infrastructure. This is a major concern. It's something that should be taken seriously. And I'm glad earlier this week that Brooke Rollins, the Secretary of Agriculture, alongside Pam Bondi and Pete Hegseth and others, brought this forward, again, noting that there's multiple ways that this can be dealt with. It can be done with congressional action. There can be executive action from President Donald Trump. And I would argue one of the biggest keys here is going to be getting states on board with this. We just talked about the two pieces of legislation that have been introduced here in North Carolina. Getting states like North Carolina, California is probably a lost cause, unfortunately, but getting North Carolina to pass either or both of these pieces of legislation to limit this foreign investment, to limit these adversarial nations from purchasing American farmland in our great state, is going to probably be the most effective way for Brooke Rollins, the Secretary of Agriculture, to deal with this. Now, the federal government obviously has a say in this. The federal government can play a key portion, not trying to divorce them from the situation entirely, but you can probably make your biggest inroads by putting some pressure on the states and encouraging them to deal with some of these issues themselves. And I would argue that that's probably a pretty smart move in the long term. I don't know that I would say that there is many negatives, that there's a huge disadvantage of this. Are all of these companies and all of these nations, are they all 100% adversarial right now? No. But what happens in the future? What happens when something goes wrong with the United States and this Chinese-owned company says, yeah, we're just going to stop producing pork? we're going to lay off the 33,000 employees that we have in all of our facilities across the United States, and we're just going to stop producing. So you're going to have tens of thousands of people without jobs, and the largest producer of pork in the United States will no longer be producing anything. That's a very real risk and concern. A Smithfield representative responded to this announcement in a statement saying, quote, Smithfield Foods is a publicly traded U.S. company listed on the NASDAQ stock market under the symbol SFD. Our American management team is based in Smithfield, Virginia, where our company's headquarters have been located since our founding in 1936. We employ approximately 33,000 people in the United States and partner with thousands of American farmers. Our products are produced in the United States, and the vast majority are consumed in the United States. We primarily export offal to China, cuts of the pig that are not typically consumed in the United States. The spokesperson said, we are a majority-owned subsidiary of Hong Kong-based WH Group Limited, a publicly traded company with shares listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, and investors from around the world, including the United States. WH Group is not a Chinese state-owned enterprise and does not undertake any commercial activities on behalf of the Chinese government. Okay. Well, then I guess as long as they say that they're not taking any part. But see, this is the difference between China and the United States. Let's just say and play out the scenario that the United States gets into a war with China. Now, I don't know how extensive of a war, but let's say there's an actual war with China, with troops on the ground and so on and so forth, actual fighting happening. The Chinese Communist Party can march their way over to Hong Kong, take over WH Group Limited, because again, there's no rights in China, can take over this company, even though right now they say, oh, we don't do any commercial activities on behalf of the Chinese government. If we were at war with China, what would stop the CCP from telling WH Group Limited, who owns Smithfield Foods, halt all production, lay off every single worker and halt production? What would stop them from doing that? There's nothing in the Communist Party rulebook that says that the CCP can't take over a company if it's justified. It's communism, after all. As long as the means justify the ends, you can do whatever the hell you want. We don't have that in America, but they do, in fact, have that in China. So what stops something like that from happening? I know that might seem like a ridiculous example. That seems like, oh, Nick, that's never going to happen. I don't know that we'll ever be in some sort of direct armed conflict with China. But if we are, which there are continued pressures and continued escalations that take place, do you want the largest producer of pork in the United States to be owned by a subsidiary that is based in Hong Kong? My answer to that is absolutely, unequivocally, without a doubt, hell no. That is a major risk to the United States economy. That is a major risk to the United States food supply. And that's got to be something that I would imagine is on the minds of Brooke Rollins, the other folks in the Trump administration, and likely some of the elected leaders here in North Carolina who have been talking about this and leading this charge. Some more commentary on our Rumble chat this morning. Because China doesn't change the name of the company like Smithfield, most have no idea the infiltration of China into our food supply. I was shocked when I found out that China owned this company. Absolutely. Very smart. And right now, right, where we sit this morning and where we've sat for the last decade since WH Group Limited purchased Smithfield, they are a publicly traded company, and I might even argue that currently, right now, they are not carrying out directives on behalf of the CCP, right? Because they're a business with investment and so on and so forth. They want the business to succeed. But again, we're looking at a relatively small slice of time. We're looking where we are right now. We don't know where we're going to be in 5 years, 10 years, 15 or 20 years. And you can guarantee that if we ever got into some sort of armed conflict with China, they would use the power and the influence that they have over the American agricultural system, just using Smithfield as one small example, to ravage the United States. How can you imagine that process unfolding? The United States is fighting a war with China, and then all of a sudden the food supply grinds to a halt. Can you imagine the pressure that that would put on the United States? You know what it would do? It would force the United States to cave and bend to China. It would force the United States, because the American people, in many cases, would be without potentially large portions of food. It would force the United States to wave the white flag and get out of the conflict. That is not a situation that I want to be in at all. This is a great decision from Brooke Rollins. This is a very noble effort by the administration, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing what else they do, the pressure that they start putting on states like North Carolina to get some of this legislation passed and some of these reforms so that we can, keep control of our agricultural supply, so that we can keep control of the ability to produce food and employ individuals to do so across the United States. I'll have links to all of this, including that image, in our show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. As we continue this Friday morning, I want to tell you about The Law Group. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in The Law Group right here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, The Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, ladies and gentlemen. They are located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088. They've got a great website set up at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or visit their website, lawgroupnc.com. That's lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. Yesterday morning, CNBC announced their number one state for business in the United States, North Carolina, back on top. We'll have those details coming up here in just a few minutes as the Nick Craig Show rolls on this morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us. Some great news out of CNBC yesterday. North Carolina officially ranking as the number one state for business. Each and every year, CNBC looks at all 50 states, categorizes them in a variety of different metrics, and determines what is the number one state for business. And this year it is, in fact, North Carolina once again. We were at the top of this list in 2022 and 2023. Last year, we fell in second place to Virginia, but we are back on top. And you can see, for those watching live this morning or after the fact on YouTube, North Carolina's economy ranks third overall, infrastructure ranks 11th, workforce fourth, cost of doing business 21st, business friendliness fourth, quality of life 29th, and technology and innovation 13th. With all of that, that puts North Carolina in first place. And boy, you can look at these top five states and very clearly see which kind of governance and which kind of leadership is really leading these charge for the number one state businesses. It goes North Carolina, Texas, Florida, Virginia, and Ohio. Those top five states, you've got Republicans controlling Texas, Republicans controlling Florida. You've got Glenn Youngkin leading the charge up in Virginia. Similar story over in Ohio, and here, of course, split government in North Carolina. But the Republican-led General Assembly, the Republican legislature, has been very, very keenly focused since 2011 to make this state more friendly for business. And you see the fruits of that labor with these announcements. You see the fruits of this labor with the fact that the United States or that, that North Carolina is once again on that list on the top. And you can see here, here's Wilmington Mayor Bill Saffo and some Democrat members of City Council with Governor Josh Stein yesterday, as Josh Stein and CNBC were here on the USS North Carolina battleship making that announcement. Obviously, for a Democrat governor, previously Roy Cooper, now Governor Josh Stein, he is reaping the benefits of North Carolina's General Assembly, who has been very keenly focused on working with business leaders, who has been very keenly focused on working with, you know, private individuals and businesses to make this state the most successful nation in the country to do business. Here's just a little bit of the governor on CNBC yesterday.
We're really excited here in North Carolina. We are open for business. Since January 1, we have announced more than $20 billion of investment, producing over 23,000 jobs here in North Carolina. We're one of the third fastest growing state in the country. We have a solid growing economy, but it's all about our people. We have the most talented, good, hardworking, friendly people you could possibly know, so that if you are a biotech or pharmaceutical company or an aerospace company, you can come here. We have the engineers and scientists to help design your product, but we also have the talented advanced manufacturing workforce you need to produce them.
And again, why is all of that happening? It's because of the Republican-led legislature. It's because of the Republican-led General Assembly that has been very hyper-focused on dealing with some of this. And we did get reaction from members of the North Carolina General Assembly yesterday. Phil Berger, he is the Senate leader, said, North Carolina offers unparalleled opportunities for businesses of all sizes. Since 2011, the Republican-led General Assembly has reshaped our state's business climate by slashing our tax rate, reducing regulatory hurdles, and supporting world-class educational and job training programs. Our community colleges and UNC system schools are vital partners in preparing our citizens to fill thousands of jobs being created here and existing ones. We must double down on our efforts to support business growth and development from Murphy to Manio. That is not something that happens accidentally. And I'll, you know, just a quick history lesson here this morning, especially for folks that are newer to the state of North Carolina. Prior to 2011, Democrats had ruled this state, both in the General Assembly and essentially in the governor's mansion, for the better part of 100 years. And when Republicans took over in 2011, North Carolina had the single most expensive and the single highest individual income tax rate in the Southeast. It was at, when I believe Republicans took over, it was 8% was what the personal income tax rate was. 8%. It's now 4.25% and is set scheduled to go down to 3.99% next year. North Carolina at the time had one of the highest corporate tax rates in the United States. That tax rate is now down to 1.99% and over the next couple of years is set to be phased out completely, joining a plethora of other states that have no corporate income tax. That stuff doesn't happen by accident. Those things don't just happen magically. You know, when we talk about the difference between Democrats and Republicans, and this goes way back to Monday's show, when we were talking about Elon Musk and his discussion of the America Party, because Republicans and Democrats are just the exact same people. There's no difference between them. There's no daylight. It's just the exact same group of people. One has a D, one has an R. This is a shining example of how that could not be further from the truth. Under Democrat control in this state, taxes were sky high. The state was broke. The state owed the federal government tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in debt. And the state was just barely coasting along. This was after 100 years of tax and spend policies from Democrats. This isn't foreign history, ladies and gentlemen. This didn't happen 200 years ago. We are talking about the state of North Carolina less than 15 years ago. Republicans come into power in the North Carolina General Assembly. At the time, it was individuals like Tom Tillis and Phil Berger that course corrected our state, that promised the people of North Carolina that they were going to make a substantial change to the way in which this state was doing business. And the end result of that is a state that over the last 5 years has been first or second in CNBC's number one state for business. This is a good thing. And it only happens because of strong fiscal responsibility in the North Carolina General Assembly. Now, let me state this. Is the General Assembly perfect? Could they be more fiscally conservative? Could they be more fiscally responsible in certain areas? Absolutely. There's always room for improvement. But we have very real examples over the last 20 years of what the difference is between Democrat and Republican control. Democrat control in North Carolina meant high taxes for individuals, high taxes for corporations, and the state was broke. Republicans swelled to power in 2011. They pay down our debt. They cut the corporate tax rate. They cut the personal income tax rate. And the end result is the state is more profitable, more successful, more prosperous, and is now one of the number one states in the United States where businesses are looking to relocate or open new subsidiaries. That stuff, again, just doesn't happen by accident. You don't just wake up one morning and, oh, look at this. We're the number one state for business. No, it happens because Republicans made key efforts and put forth key programs to make those changes. House Speaker Destin Hall said, "We've taken a deliberate approach to fostering a business-friendly environment grounded in policies that reduce barriers to entry, promote competition, and encourage investment and growth. Being ranked number one for business yet again is just the latest example of successful reforms implemented in North Carolina by the Republican-led General Assembly." Some other commentary and quotes. Donald Bryson, the CEO of the John Locke Foundation, said, "North Carolina's third CNBC top state for business title in 4 years is no accident. It refers a decade of disciplined fiscal policy, competitive tax reform, and a regulatory climate that trusts entrepreneurs more than bureaucrats. The result is a 3.7% GDP surge, tens of thousands of new jobs, and a talent pipeline that rivals any in the nation. Lawmakers should double down on this free market formula because the real winners are North Carolinians who enjoy greater opportunity and rising prosperity." You can't point to anything else. Now, when Roy Cooper was in the governor's mansion, 2022 and 2023, when the state won, he, of course, took his victory lap. He's the governor. It's his right to do so. Josh Stein yesterday taking the victory lap, his right to do so. He's the governor. But do not fool yourself for a second. Do not fall into some sort of trap that is set to be laid out by the Democrats that the reason that the state of North Carolina is the number one for business is because of their policies. We know what the Democrat policies are. It's tax and spend, tax and spend. You compare and contrast that to what Republicans have done over the last 15 years in this state, and you see very key fiscal responsibility. You see changes being made in the tax code for both personal individuals and, of course, corporations. You see regulatory reforms, cutting red tape, allowing businesses to open, not making them jump through hula hoop after hula hoop of regulation, bureaucracy, and red tape to open a business. Those have real key strategic effects on a state like North Carolina, and it's obviously paying off. You don't win it 3 out of 4 years. You're not in the top 2 5 years in a row if things are not being done intentionally. Very, very intentional here in North Carolina. This is great news for our state as growth continues. I know, especially here locally, there's a lot of discussion about growth, a lot of individuals not happy with growth, especially across southeastern North Carolina. The reality is growth is happening. Growth is good. And I'll just make this point. We'll, of course, get into this as the city council elections come through and come forward next year. Later this year, I should say, for city council and stuff of that nature. It is always, and when I say always, I mean always. it is always to be better on the side of growth than on the side of decline. That does not mean that growth doesn't have its challenges. That doesn't mean that growth doesn't need to be put in check sometimes. But it is always to be better on the side of growth than on the side of decline. And the reality in North Carolina is very simple. After 100 years of Democrat control around 2010, the state was on the side of decline. The state was broke. The taxes were too high. It was not a competitive place to live or to work. Republicans took control and took power in 2011. They started reforming the state. They cut personal income tax. They cut the corporate tax rate. They removed regulation. They removed red tape. And you are now seeing the fruits of that labor out of the Republican-led General Assembly. We no longer owe hundreds of millions of dollars to the federal government. Taxes continue to go down. And lo and behold, the state has more money. This stuff works. There are real examples, literally over the last 15 years in North Carolina, of what fiscal responsibility looks like and the key differences between Democrat control and Republican control. Tax and spend versus fiscal conservatism and fiscal responsibility. So hat tip to the North Carolina General Assembly for continuing this charge forward, for continuing to highlight and focus on some of these key areas. It does not go without notice, obviously. Great acknowledgement there from CNBC. Great news for the state of North Carolina. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to do it for a Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Give them a call at 910-251-6088 or visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Thanks for spending some time with us this morning, live 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, or X, and of course, 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great weekend. We're back with you Monday morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.